Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, I'm your host, Ann Hillman. In case you missed it, Barack Obama, the president, visited Alaska earlier this week. His three-day tour included stops in Anchorage, Seward, Dillingham, and Kotzebue. His primary theme, climate change. On today's episode, we'll talk about the president's trip and what it really means for Alaska. My guests today are Liz Ruskin, APRN's Washington, D.C. correspondent, who covered the president's visit in Anchorage and Seward. Thanks for being here. And Alex DeMarben, the reporter with Alaska Dispatch News, who has worked extensively around the state and followed the president up to Kotzebue. Thank you both very much for being here, especially after such a very long week.
Sure.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
So let's just start with a quick overview of the visit. And we actually have a short video put together by the video team here at APRN showing some of the highlights. Let's watch and see what the president did.
President Barack Obama visited Alaska this week, and it was more than just a fuel stop this time. From early on, the president made clear that the impetus for his visit was climate change. And in that vein, he announced several new policy initiatives while touring Alaska. From accelerating the acquisition process for a heavy icebreaker, to new funding for village relocation efforts. The three-day tour started in Anchorage with a State Department conference. Obama was the keynote speaker, and he used this opportunity to urge other nations to commit to emissions reductions at climate talks in Paris later this year.
To all the foreign dignitaries who are here, I want to be very clear. We are eager to work with your nations on the unique opportunities that the Arctic presents and the unique challenges that it faces. We are not going to, any of us, be able to solve these challenges by ourselves.
From Anchorage, the president made his way to Seward, where he toured Exit Glacier and Kenai Fjords National Park. And on the third and final day of his visit, the president touched down in both Dillingham and Kotzebue, just north of the Arctic Circle. Obama is the first sitting president to visit the Alaska Arctic. After a flyover of Kivalina on the way back to Anchorage, the president's whirlwind tour of the last frontier was over on Wednesday. Alaskans are now nursing their presidential hangovers and starting to ponder on what significance this visit carries for their state. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Ellingson.
So that was kind of a quick gloss of what he did. Yeah. And, you know, following the coverage, it seemed like so much of what he did was he went to NNN Market in Dillingham and he talked about high prices and he went and he stood in front of a glacier and talked about climate change. And then he had really lengthy interviews with pop media like Rolling Stone and a reality show. Mm-hmm. So some of these events were really important for local community members. But overall, do you think, I mean, what does this mean? What's the significance of this visit, Liz?
Well, I would say it was kind of all a show, and that doesn't mean it wasn't significant. It was a very successful head of state trip, and, you know, the President of the United States has star power like nobody else, and he was embracing our symbols, sled dog puppies and salmon, and he did a pretty good Yupik dance, I thought.
And Someone said he danced like a girl.
Well, I did love that he
very dramatic, you know, masculine dancing, but that's okay.
But I love that he took his cue from the tiny little girl next to him, right, on, you know, trying to get in sync. But I thought he did a really good job. We've certainly seen a lot of guests stand up with Yupik Native dancers and kind of do it half-heartedly, and I thought he was into it.
Right.
So I thought
he did
so,
awesome, and people loved it. So.
Yeah, and that was really an embrace of our symbols, and that was recognition not mm-hmm. just for the rest of the nation, but you know, the world, recognition of who we are,
right,
and what we love about our state.
That's very true. Is that what you saw in Kotzebue too?
Yeah, definitely. People really appreciated his, like, visit with John Baker, for example. Mm-hmm. It was definitely a symbolic trip more than anything else, but people really appreciated that he was there to interact with folks, even if only briefly or even just in a cultural manner and not necessarily there to discuss issues. Mm-hmm. So definitely so many people were so happy in Kotzebue with his engagement with the culture. And the fact that he mentioned like poverty and high energy prices and understood that items have to be barged into communities. And that leads to higher costs for fuel, for food, for all that. That was, I think, a rare understanding of rural Alaska that you don't often hear from visitors. So people were very excited that he seemed to understand sort of a little bit about what life was like. So.
Yeah, and I was here in Anchorage the whole time, and I didn't go to anything official. I just hung out on the street corners where people were waiting for the motorcade to come by, and they were all so thrilled. Like, even people who didn't necessarily agree with this politics were like, oh, the president's here, we're so blessed. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It definitely was sort of this ongoing party in way or another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's why I think it was really a head of state visit rather than a head of government visit. And in some countries, these are two different roles held by two different people. Here, it's, you know, one person, but that's what it was a trip that in other places might have been done by the symbolic figurehead of the country or a monarch. But
so, like, you know, the Queen of England visiting.
Exactly.
Huh. But I think, you know, the fact that we've not really been visited in a meaningful way in some time, you know, at least even for more than just a fuel stop, I think that really was the key part of this for a lot of people, just that someone is paying attention. Attention enough to cross the Arctic Circle, you know, and come see us in Kotzebue. You know, they could have picked more well-known places like Nome or Barrow, but they went to Kotzebue. So just the fact that he went there was a huge deal, and enough for many people, I would say.
And drawing the worldwide spotlight on these places,
totally,
it wasn't
totally.
Just for our benefit. It was also saying, hey, you know, this is a fantastic place here, and it's part of the United States, and we need to take responsibility for, you know, the issues, or at least recognize the issues that are going on here.
So he did make a couple of small, not really policy announcements, but a couple of things. Like he said, they're going to accelerate building an icebreaker so that we have icebreakers sooner rather than later. Did that seem to have any impact in Kotzebue?
Definitely those things did. I mean, including the relocation money, for example, I think $2 million from the Department of Energy, $4 million, actually it's $4 million from the Department of Energy to help with a renewable energy contest, I think. $2 million that the Denali Commission, I think, would administer to help villages relocate, or at least plan for it. Obviously, that's not going to be enough. People were pretty happy that those things were announced, but they were also quick to say, you know, that's not going to go very far.
Yeah.
$2 million for relocation when it costs $100 million just to move a single village at least. So people were pretty, they were happy, and they were happy that these issues were brought up. But they also said we need more, you know, hopefully this is just a beginning. The Arctic icebreaker is also a good thing. We'll see what actually happens with that. But again, it was symbolic, and people were happy that their issues were at least being considered by the, you know, most powerful man in the world, so that's nice. So,
there was, when he first arrived in Anchorage, he met with a large group of Alaska Native leaders here in Anchorage. And Liz, you stopped in for the end of that?
Right, I was in the White House pool at that point, so that meant that we were medium-sized group of reporters were rushed in at the end, and the president spoke for a few minutes about what they had discussed, and we were rushed out and on to the next thing. We were talking earlier about what it was like to be in the White House pool, and it was a lot of kind of being shuttled around and rushed here and rushed there, and it wasn't a lot of kind of what we normally consider reporting opportunities.
No, it was definitely a unique experience.
And, yeah.
You know, we were not able to ask any questions. I think the closest I got was 12 feet away. And it was
the president.
Yeah. Yep, 12 feet away from
so
the president.
So you didn't even shake his hand.
Oh, no, no. I told my daughter before I left that, you know, I'm sure he'll at least look at me. So that's going to be, you know, neat. but no, there was, I mean, 12 feet away was definitely the closest. I mean, you really had to reach your ear in just to hear what he was saying as he was interacting with whoever he was talking with, John Baker at one point, or the city manager of Kotzebue at another point. But it was a very controlled event, and we were just herded around as part of the pool. And we only had a limited time. It might have been better just to be a reporter on the street who could, you know, run here and run there and see other things that are happening rather than being shuttled around quickly. They wouldn't even let me talk to local residents on the street.
Really?
Yeah, I was caught doing that, and I was told by a stern Secret Service guy that I needed to get back to the van with the rest of the pool. And, you know, they had large guns, so it was not something that I was going to argue with. So
I thought the Secret Service and the White House press office were very professional and actually much kinder. And, you know, because I was often standing in the wrong place because, you
right.
know, that's just... Anyway, and I thought...
How do you know where to go?
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone seemed to understand exactly how the president was, and I couldn't... Anyway, I thought they were very nice, and we all deal with security at the airport
right.
or in different places. I thought this was much nicer and more professional. I was in Seward, and, you know, the exit glacier thing, the president seemed to enjoy that, but out on the boat ride, he really seemed to be having a good time. And the sun was out, and it was a beautiful day, and everyone seemed to be enjoying themselves, from the national media to the president. And mm-hmm. that was just nice as an Alaskan. It felt great to have people really appreciate mm-hmm. the place. And
yeah.
So that was nice.
Were you on the same boat as the president, or you were on a
different
boat?
No, we were on a separate press boat. I'm sure part of that might have been security reasons. They wanted the president on his own boat. But the real obvious reason was so that we could line up. You know, we had a lot of TV cameras on mm-hmm. our boat and still photographers. And, it, you know, the two boat captains kind of circled each other trying to line up the boats with the glacier so that they could all get the perfect shot. And... boy, the photographers were quite happy with what they got.
But isn't part? I mean, part of it must be that they don't want the script and the message to be messed with. I mean, they don't want reporters
sure.
shouting them questions. Not, you know, no Alaskan reporters asked any questions. There were just some set-up interviews and the whole scripted roadshow with, say, Rolling Stone, for example.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is just concern that the. You know, that he's going to have to go off script, right? He never talked about Shell drilling, mm-hmm. I don't believe, on the entire trip. And, of course, that's a central question. So how did he spend 3 days in Alaska and never have to address that issue?
Yeah, a lot of the protesters' signs were about Shell.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The protesters and the fans both had signs about Shell. Yes. Our colleague, Zachariah Hughes, has a story about him not taking questions from Alaska Press. Mm-hmm. And... I think a lot of that is just par for the course with how the president moves and
right.
What the pool is limited to.
So yeah, I think here in Alaska, we're just not used to that kind of control,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we can see our governor walking down the street
exactly.
Pretty frequently.
Yeah.
So not quite the same.
What would you have asked if you guys could have had freedom within the pool?
I really wanted to ask him about... offshore drilling and why he approved it. I understand that because it was done during the Bush administration's time, mm-hmm. that it's a costly thing to undo. I mean, there are big legal implications, and I don't think that's been covered a lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they talk about the hypocrisy, but I do believe that in a way he seems sort of bound to do what was already set in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to ask him about that because I think it would provide some context to that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think he would have had opportunities to stop it, and he didn't. So it does seem like he's saying that's safe enough. But I would have liked to ask him mm-hmm. why he thinks that is safe enough, but thinks it's impossible to safely drill in the Arctic Refuge. I mean, it does seem mm-hmm. like incongruous anyway.
In offshore in Bristol Bay as well is off limits.
Right. Where presumably the technical challenges would be easier in Bristol Bay or onshore.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
But we didn't get a chance to ask that. And I had a question prepared, but I really did not think that we would have a chance to ask it. We actually invited the president to be on Talk mm-hmm. of Alaska on Tuesday. We yeah. really didn't think he would, but
you know, you always got to try, right?
Got to ask.
And what was the response? Just any response at all?
A White House person said, "Thank you so much for the invitation. Uh-huh. We will give this all the consideration it is due."
No, right. Which is zero.
No. I don't know. I like to think there might have been a little conversation.
Okay.
I mean, the president did a podcast in, you know, a garage in Los Angeles. So, you know, why wouldn't he do our show?
But anyway,
because he had other things going on that day.
Right. Yeah, there's interesting. It would be interesting to find out exactly how they decide who, like, where he's going to go and where he's not, why not.
It seemed like, yeah, definitely. So they maintained their script almost down to the minute. For example, in Kotzebue, he was supposed to be there at 5:05. Mm-hmm. He arrived about 5 and actually stepped off the plane right about 5:05. It's just amazing that in a state like this, mm-hmm. where, as we all know, weather and so many other factors create so many complications. I mean, Seychelles, you know, accident, for example. As one thing, but even on a 3-day trip that they were able to pull this off almost down to the minute. Mm-hmm. But there were some surprises, like the thing with John Baker, mm-hmm. Where he met with him at his dog kennel along the Chukchi Sea. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that was not expected.
But you got expected by us, but surely that had been planned in advance.
Mayor Maya Lukin in Kotzebue mm-hmm. said that somebody from the White House called her just really shortly before that happened mm-hmm. and said, you know, you got the number for John Baker. So it was arranged maybe an hour or two before,
oh, wow.
it sounds like. So there were a few things when they felt like maybe they had a few minutes, they could squeeze something extra in. So mm-hmm.
I thought their advance team just did a great job. I think their locations and activities were really quite good.
It was good. But it was definitely a production, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I don't
oh,
know.
Yeah.
I don't know if Alaskans understand that, maybe they do. I was surprised by how much of a production it all is.
Mm-hmm. It was massive.
Everything is staged, and so to speak, and everything he said was obviously thought out and prepared well before.
I mean, a lot of it was released beforehand, too.
Yeah, it was really in striking contrast to what we saw with Sally Jewell in February, where she took some really tough questions, even a lot of abuse from people. But, you know, she talked to me for 15-20 minutes among, you know, a group of other reporters. So it was really amazing access. And so obviously he used some front people and other people to bring him back the message. And, you know, there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. But I was surprised by how scripted it was.
You know, that reminds me of all of the people that came up on this trip that would have been news stories all by themselves that we
right.
didn't even cover. I mean, we had, of course, Sally Jewell, which was a big story. Kerry was a big story. Very few people noticed that Ambassador Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor, was mm-hmm, with him.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Washburn, the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs. That's a very important job here for Alaskans.
Never mentioned.
They were just in the back room. Not to mention all the foreign ministers who were there. I mean, they didn't get a mention because we were busy on another big story.
And they were here primarily for the Glacier Conference, right? I don't think that I certainly didn't see any of those folks in Kotzebue.
I saw Ambassador Rice was in Seward.
Okay.
The president bought her ice cream.
Okay.
I can report.
Did he buy you ice cream?
I did not accept the ice cream. Aside from the ethical issues, it was just hard keeping up, you know, all the gear and the rushing and coming here and going there. And, you mm-hmm. know, I wasn't about to hold an ice cream.
Fair enough.
In the midst of trying to report.
Right.
So you were at the Glacier Conference.
Right.
And a lot of his speech was all about climate change and how we have to act now. And it was dire but hopeful. Do you think his speech shared anything new for Alaskans, made any new points?
I think that particular speech was not aimed at Alaska. It was aimed at the world. Mm-hmm. It was, I thought, a downer. He did, maybe it was his mood and maybe it was just his his precision in pointing out what happens, you know, as he sees it if we don't act. And he seemed to emphasize that quite a bit. And he did say it's not too late. And he talked about the other benefits of acting, but I don't think it was anything new, except maybe in the tone. And I was really struck by the line about, you know, here's what happens if we don't act. We have, you know, desolate cities and, you know, fields that where nothing mm-hmm. can grow. And it was, you know, it mm-hmm, was this mm-hmm. sort of Mad Max scene he painted.
I felt like he was describing the old version of Sim City where you have Godzilla coming through and destroying everything.
I'll take your word for that, Anne.
All right, so I'm dating myself and deeming myself a geek. But... So, when did people in Kotzebue talk about that speech at all?
Yeah, definitely. Mayor Reggie Jewell, who's the mayor of the Northwest Arctic Borough mm-hmm. in Kotzebue with like 11 to 12 villages. I forget. I think it's 12 exactly. Anyway, he was very impressed with the force of it. He mentioned that the tone was very impressive, that he did not miss any words. So almost the same thing that you were saying in that regard. Mm-hmm. So, and I heard from other people saying the same thing. And overall in Kotzebue, they really liked the climate change message. A lot of people were skeptical that anything would happen, you know, before the president's term is over. And they were also skeptical that anything can be done about stopping climate change. But again, they were just happy that it was being recognized mm-hmm. because they've lived through a lot of these changes. And so they were really happy with the overall message.
Liz, you're based in Washington. Do you think his speech will have any impact there?
Hard to say. No, I don't think it would. No, I think people are pretty dug into their positions. I thought he made a comment that anyone who's denying climate change or is treating it like a joke, any leader who's doing this is not fit to lead. I thought that was very pointed I thought that was pointed at the domestic audience. I mean, at the domestic leaders anyway. But no, I don't think it'll change minds in Washington. But I think that was more aimed at the international audience.
You think it was effective there internationally?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine that there's going to be movement on climate change, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a different message than what we've seen in the past, though, right? For example, under G.W. Bush, I mean, this is a whole new change that a president's actually raising it to this level. Mm-hmm. So I think just by doing that, I think that we might go into Paris, for example, where he's trying to fashion a climate accord. Mm-hmm. He might have more of a chance to do that because he's done this.
Right.
That's
right. For many years, the Europeans really wanted to see some action, and the U.S.
Right.
was seen as lagging and
head in the sand.
Right. And right. So they've gotten the message now that the president.
We're at the table.
Yeah.
Basically. So I don't know. I think it could make a difference in that sense. So.
I like your optimism.
We'll see.
Good to have optimism about this.
Yeah, we'll see.
I tend to think that people are fixed in their positions, but maybe that's not true.
What else should people be taking away from this visit?
I know one of the things that I take away from this visit is just that it was fun. Let's not lie. I mean, yes, there are big issues out there, but, you know, it was a heck of a lot of fun. And I think that's sort of how the people on the street felt who were clamoring for a view of the president. There were, by the way, some very funny signs in Seward. A lot of people watching motorcades, you couldn't tell which car Obama was in because it's part of the security, but there are dark windows and there's a couple cars that look alike. And so one person held a sign that said, "Honk once if Obama." And I thought that was a great sign. So anyway, I just, you know, it was fun and exciting. And in all the talk about serious issues and things he didn't say and things that he didn't say as well as we might have wanted him to say, you know, let's not lose track of the fact that it was fun. Or am I being too silly on that point?
No. Yeah, it's great. It's a blast. I was disappointed in Kotzebue. There weren't a lot of signs, there weren't great signs. You know, but there was a lot of cool decorations. Like four wheelers were decorated with flags, and dog sleds were decorated. So there were all kinds of fun decorations like that. And yeah, definitely it was a blast. I mean, everybody really liked it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the best thing is just that he seemed to say, we care about you, Alaska. And people really took that to heart. And it's so funny because it comes after Sally Jewell's visit 6 months ago where everybody was saying, why do they hate us so much? So I don't know why he would care to respond if he was responding to that, but it's almost like he was responding to the message, you know, to the concern that we hate him and no, we like you. Yeah. Here's all these things that we want to do for you, we're listening to you.
Yeah.
So that was just really an interesting psychological moment, I guess. So I don't know. So I guess we should take away, in my opinion, that at least they're listening to our issues, you know. So.
Do you think that will have an impact on our congressional delegation?
I think it helps a lot of their efforts. A lot of the things he announced, icebreakers and, you know, rural infrastructure issues, I think it kind of boosts their efforts there.
I think elevating the Denali Commission to a new level is somewhat significant given, you know, where it's been in the past few years. And it's done so much in rural Alaska, build new clinics.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Well, let's end on that positive note. Thank you both very much for being here.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.